Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 5. Vidura's talks with Maitreya. Text 14. Tan chocha shocha na vido nu shocha.
Hare katayam vimukana
kena.
Hare katayam vimukana kena.
Shinoti devo nimisastu yesham. Ayor vrita vada gati smritinam. Tan, all those. Shocha, pitiable. Shochan, of the pitiable. Avida, ignorant. Anushoche, I pity. Hare, of the Lord. Katayam, to the topics of vimukkan, averse, agena, because of sinful activities, trinodi, decaying, deva, of the Lord, animisha, eternal time, to, but, yesham, of whom, ayu, duration of life. Vrita, uselessly. Vada, philosophical speculations. Gati, ultimate goal. Smritinam, of those following different rituals. Translation. O sage, persons who, because of their sinful activities, are averse to the topics of transcendence, and thus ignorant of the purpose of the Mahabharata, Bhagavad Gita, are pitied by the pitiable. I also pity them, because I see how their duration of life is spoiled by eternal time. While they involve themselves in presentations of philosophical speculation, theoretical ultimate goals of life, and different modes of ritual. Purport. According to the modes of material nature, there are three kinds of relationships between human beings and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Those who are in the modes of ignorance and passion are averse to the existence of God, or else they formally accept the existence of God in the capacity of an order supplier. Above them are those who are in the mode of goodness. This second class of men believe the Supreme Brahman to be impersonal. They accept the cult of bhakti, in which hearing of Krishna Katha is the first item, as a means and not the end. Above them are those who are pure devotees. They are situated in the transcendental stage above the mode of material goodness. Such persons are decidedly convinced that the name, form, fame, qualities, and so forth of the personality of Godhead are non-different from one another on the absolute plane. For them, hearing of the topics of Krishna is equal to meeting with him face to face. According to this class of men, who are situated in pure devotional service to the Lord, the highest goal of human life is purushartha, devotional service to the Lord, the real mission of life. The impersonalists, because they engage in mental speculation and have no faith in the personality of Godhead, have no business hearing the topics of Krishna. Such persons are pitiable for the first-class pure devotees of the Lord. The pitiable impersonalists pity those who are influenced by the modes of ignorance and passion, but the pure devotees of the Lord take pity on them both, because both waste their most valuable time in the human form of life in false pursuits, sense enjoyment, and mental speculative presentations of different theories and goals of life. Om Gyana Chimadantasya Gyananjana Shalakya Chakshun Militanyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This chapter begins with Vidura asking questions of Maitreya, but his questions seem not to get right to the point. Vidura actually wants to hear about the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He knows that hearing about Krishna is the solution to all life's problems and the miseries that life brings. But before he gets to that point, he is having compassion on the common, ordinary persons. For them, they know nothing about what is the science of God. As described in the purport, persons in the mode of ignorance and passion either reject any existence of God, or else they say that God is our order supplier. And the purpose of God is to give us what we want: good sense gratification, wealth, comfort in this world. That's the purpose of God. And of course, when such persons experience a setback, and when they lose mightily, as always happens from time to time in material nature, then naturally they reject the order supplier. You didn't fulfill my orders. What's the purpose of God? What is the purpose of theism? I didn't get what I want. Such persons are classified in the mode of ignorance and passion. So, Vidura is concerned about them. Before he can get to the topics of Krishna's personal activities and qualities, he has to firmly establish what is real happiness. Today you see that people have no idea anymore what is happiness. Even the traditional forms of material happiness, people are having a hard time achieving. What is supposed to be a routine possession in life, material happiness, is now such a mystery. This verse talks about pitying persons who waste time by involving themselves in presentations of philosophical speculation, theoretical ultimate goals of life, and different modes of ritual. So this shows you what kind of civilization you have today. Vidura is criticizing persons who waste their time in philosophical speculation, theories about what's the ultimate goal of life, various rituals for going to the heavenly planets. But in this so-called civilization, none of that is going on. You simply have very crude, unpolished animal activities. So Bhagavatam is giving you an understanding of what is a real material civilization so that you can understand that what's going on today doesn't even come up to the level of a real human material civilization. You don't see people wasting their time, oh, let me speculate philosophically. Oh, I have my theory about what is the ultimate goal of life, and I'm performing rituals so that in my next life I'll go to the heavenly planets. You don't see that going on anywhere. So that shows you how low human society has sunk. So therefore, Vidura asked the question to Maitreya. Everyone is pursuing happiness, but it's easily observed that by their pursuits of happiness, they find no satiation, no satisfaction, nor do they find the end of their distress. The very things that they're aiming for in their struggle for happiness, those things never come to them. In fact, what does Vidura say they find? They simply accrue agitation. So you might wonder, how can you get agitation from innocent endeavors to be happy? Isn't the effort to be happy so natural? Why should it result in aggravation, agitation? But material happiness is like a fever. A fever is a disturbance. Material happiness is something external to the soul. The drive for material happiness takes over your body and mind and causes an artificial agitation, because material happiness is not natural for the spirit soul. What is natural for the spirit soul is to engage in devotional service simply for Krishna's pleasure. In that way, the real devotee has unlimited bliss without even worrying about it. The real devotee is simply thinking how Krishna can enjoy, how Krishna can have pleasure. A real devotee never thinks of his or her own contentment. Now that may sound frightening. I mean, I shouldn't worry about my own contentment? Therefore, Vidura is educating you that in our attempts for material happiness, we will not be satisfied, number one. Number two, we will not terminate the distress that's coming to us. And number three, we will simply cause an aggravation for our consciousness. Now, impersonalists understand that. They understand that endeavors for material gain, endeavors for material satisfaction, simply lead to frustration. But then, they have no idea about pleasing the senses of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They have no idea how to take shelter of the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of Krishna. They have no idea that because they think that beyond material existence is just the formless, qualityless, changeless, personalityless spiritual reality. Now, don't be tricked by this. Such a notion is actually covered Buddhism, in that instead of saying ultimately everything is nothing, instead you say ultimately there is this reality in which has no form, no personality, no change, no qualities, no activities. This is another way of saying nothing. That was Shankaracharya's trick, how to bring India back to the Vedas through speculation rather than reject the Vedas. So this is why in today's verse you see the discussion of three kinds of human beings in their relationships with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Those in the modes of ignorance and passion, and those in the mode of goodness. The impersonalist can be in the mode of goodness. They understand that there is a spiritual dimension beyond the material body. But they make the mistake of thinking that that spiritual dimension has no variety. So they posit some ultimate reality in which there are no qualities, no individualities, no personalities, no forms, which is just a different way of saying nothing. There's nothingness. You just become extinct. So they say the same thing as the Buddhists, but in a different way. Therefore, it's called covered Buddhism. third class of persons, the devotees, understand that Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes are for real. They are so real that simply hearing about Krishna Katha, hearing about topics of Krishna, gives you the darshan of Krishna. You can meet Krishna face to face simply by hearing about him. As Prabhupada writes here, for them, for the bhaktas, hearing of the topics of Krishna is equal to meeting with him face to face. Now, do we really accept that? Here you are sitting down, hearing about Krishna. Now, is that really the same as meeting Krishna face to face? So you may say, well, we don't have that experience. But as we go on with the hearing process, our consciousness becomes more and more pure, and then indeed, you have the experience that hearing about Krishna is the same as seeing Krishna face to face. The hearing process cleanses the dust from the mirror of the heart, and then you can actually see once the consciousness is clear. We are firmly entrenched in the science of hearing about Krishna. Hearing about Krishna, first of all, cleanses the material contaminations. And secondly, hearing about Krishna brings you face to face with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because Krishna's glories are non-different from Krishna. This is knowledge of Advaita Gyan, knowledge of non-duality. So-called knowledge of non-duality means there's no variety, there's no form, there's no personality. Real knowledge of non-duality means there is variety, but all the varieties are of the same quality. Krishna is full of unlimited variety. But his name, form, qualities, and pastimes, his transcendental variegatedness, is all absolute. That means there's no difference between Krishna and his body, Krishna and his name, Krishna and his personality, Krishna and his qualities. Therefore, when we hear about Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes, we are directly associating with Krishna. This is the mysticism of Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is, on one level, informational. It's giving you knowledge of the material world and what's beyond. And of course, that's the most valuable information. But Bhagavatam is also doing something much deeper and much more inconceivable. Besides giving you information, the Bhagavatam is giving you the association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead through sound. So that is why you're sitting in Bhagavatam class. First of all, because it is the order. It is part of sadhana bhakti. And secondly, it's your daily association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vidura wants to firmly establish this point. But before he can get to the nature of the personal glories of Krishna, he has to clear out the ignorance and illusion of the common person. And Srila Prabhupada explains this in a purport. A common man cannot understand the Lord. He must first know the real position of his life under the influence of the illusory energy. In illusion, one thinks that he can be happy only by fruit of activities. But what actually happens is that one becomes more and more entangled in the network of action and reaction and does not find any solution to the problem of life. So for the common person, first, he or she has to understand the nature of illusion, how the striving for material goals will never satisfy you, and in fact will simply produce agitation. The common person today is not concerned with philosophical speculation, theoretical ultimate goals of life, and different modes of ritual for going to the heavenly planets. The common person today is simply concerned with economic gain and sensual satisfaction, whether coming as entertainment or sensual indulgence. That is all the common person today is concerned with. Therefore, we strive to dispel the ignorance that makes someone think, I shall be happy materially. In that effort to convince people, we agree with the impersonalists. The impersonalists also understand material striving is foolish. It simply produces distress. Our bhakti begins beyond liberation. Up to the point of liberation from material existence, we agree with the impersonalists. We are not the body. There's a spiritual reality. Material happiness will simply result in frustration. But then once you are free from illusion, that is when bhakti actually begins. And of course, Srimad Bhagavatam is explaining to you how the variegatedness of Krishna is nothing material. Mayavadi means the speculation that everything is Maya. Any kind of individuality, any kind of form, quality, or activity is Maya. Therefore, Mayavad, the truth, the Vad is Maya. As Srila Prabhupada quips, the Mayavadis think everything is Maya except the nonsense they speak. How to get people to understand that material activities for happiness produce the opposite result. It's very difficult to do that. In trying to reach out to non-devotees, at least 75% of my energy is put in to just convince them of this point that Vidura is asking of Maitreya. Because Vidura wants to clear out this point. What is the use? Everyone in this world engages in fruitive activities to attain happiness. But the result is no satisfaction, nor any end of distress. In fact, the result is simply aggravation. So he's asking Maitreya, please, therefore, give us directions on how one should live for real happiness. At a program a few nights ago, I was asking university students, so, what are your magic moments in life? What are your peak accomplishments? And they would say things like, oh, one girl and boy were there, one couple, peak moments in life, our highest attainments, cuddling together on a bench in the park. That was the supreme destination. So I asked, well, can you cuddle together on a bench in the park every day of the year? You know, Melbourne in the winter, you know. Cuddling together on the bench in a park requires so many conditions. You need time off from work. It depends on the weather. It depends on the mood of the beloved. It depends on your health. There's so many conditions just to attain the supreme destination of cuddling together on the bar. And bear in mind, these students were the foremost intellectuals. So I had to work hard to point out to them that there must be something higher. It was hard work. Someone else said that when she worked in some pub in Spain and partied every night, drank and had spontaneous lust affairs, this was fun, but the problem was that afterwards she felt depressed. So she said she learned that such activities just lead to being depressed. Nevertheless, they were fun. So I said, well, what kind of happiness or fun is that if in the end you're depressed and feel so empty? No, no, no. They try to convince me. You don't understand. Even though it leads to distress, for the moment that it's happening, it's fun. And remember, these are the topmost students. So I have to work hard to get them to see the connection between imaginary happiness and the distress that will follow. I have to work hard to explain to them, how can you call it fun when you yourself say it leads to depression? But you see, this is what the material nature does to you. It forces you to lower your standards so much to practically you're an animal. Others would say, just live for the moment. Why do you have to worry about what the future is? Just get good stimulations, good experiences for the moment. So I asked them, is that the prime achievement of human life? Yes. Just be in the moment, get the good feelings of the moment. So then I have to explain. Congratulations, you have presented to me animal life. Animals are superior than human beings for living in the moment. So this is how low things have sunk. So I have to work hard to get them to see how, if something ends up in distress, how can you say it's fun? But if you don't know anything else, you'll say like that. Hey, what more do you want out of us? You know? This is all we know. Okay, it leads to depression, it leads to feeling empty, but anyway, at least while it was happening, it was fun. And then they say, besides it being fun while it was happening, even though it leads to depression, you learn from it. You learn that this isn't what you should be doing, even though it's fun. I know it's hard for many of you to get into this kind of mindset, but this is what's going on. Especially if you're from India, it's really hard for you to, okay. You're doing something that leads to depression. but you still say it's fun. And then you say that it has a purpose and that you learn that this isn't what you should be doing. This fun isn't what you should be doing. But it is fun. But this kind of consciousness is also taking over India. There's a false idea of what is advancement in civilization. This false idea is you simply enjoy your senses for the moment. This is sweeping the world now. Therefore, Vidura's question to Maitreya is so important. See, he's saying, look, before I can ask you about the personal glories of the Lord, I have to clear out this illusion that the common person is so surrendered to. That acting karmically for material happiness will bring satisfaction and the end of distress. Actually, it brings the opposite. Unless we hear this regularly, we'll fall victim to this all-pervading fantasy. It's only by hearing regularly that we can protect ourselves from this omnipresent illusion. So once Vidura and Maitreya can establish the futility of material endeavor for happiness, then Vidura can ask about the personal glories of Krishna as the solution to all problems. Otherwise, people will say, chanting Hare Krishna, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, what's that going to do for me? How's it going to help me in my endeavors for happiness? So then first you have to establish that their endeavors for happiness are futile. You have to, so to speak, saw the floor out from under them. And then they can actually start to hear how Krishna's glories are non-material and can bring you, hearing them brings you the presence of the spiritual reality. And that is where Vidura really wants to head. But first, out of mercy for the conditioned souls, he has to clear out these false conceptions of happiness. For our own devotees, sometimes they forget that simply hearing about Krishna solves all problems. We become tested in our daily life about our priorities and our solutions. You'll hear Vidura ask tomorrow, "Oh Maitreya, O friend of the distressed, the glories of the Supreme Lord can alone do good for people all over the world. Therefore, just as bees collect honey from flowers, kindly describe the essence of all topics, the topics of the Lord." So, Maitreya is addressed as Artabandhu. He's the friend of those who are distressed, because he knows what the solution to the distress is. Hearing about Krishna cleanses our heart of the illusions that cause such false, foolish activities. And most importantly, hearing about Krishna brings you the presence of Krishna. Seeing Krishna through sound. Ordinary people have a common saying that seeing is believing. But we say hearing is believing. Hearing is not only believing, hearing is experiencing. This is the bhakti mysticism, if you want to call it. If you're looking for the miracle, that is the miracle in sound. How by hearing about Krishna gives you Krishna's association. Simply by sitting and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, you have far surpassed any material endeavors for happiness. You are first-class experts in self-interest. Just by participating in the process of hearing and chanting about Krishna, you are the most expert in self-interest. That kind of conviction is necessary for advancement in bhakti. That kind of conviction is not simply based on belief, it is based on practical experience. In other words, the daily life of the bhakta gives you experience how you can be satisfied simply by hearing about Krishna. This opportunity should not be missed. This opportunity to realize you can be happy simply by hearing about Krishna, chanting Krishna's glories. That opportunity is the prime benefit of the human form of life. Otherwise, there's tragedy in that no one knows anything beyond the most crudest forms of so-called happiness. That's all you're left with these days. There's no question of performing activities to go to the heavenly planets. There's no question of philosophical speculation. At a program, this program 2 days ago, there was one person, one guest who had just graduated with a degree in philosophy. Very unusual. And he's saying what he has to endure, what he has to go through, because people are always on his case. You studied philosophy? What's the point of that? How much money is that going to bring you? So he actually has to develop so much tolerance and humility, because everyone he meets, you studied philosophy. How's that going to bring you money? So he just gets tired of hearing this question all the time. So I told him, don't worry, just come to our gatherings. We'll glorify you for having studied philosophy. You can come here all you want and talk about real philosophy. He was so relieved. So this is the way it is these days. One person at Auckland University was telling me the statistics. He said, besides all the thousands of students who are graduating with a concentration in business or engineering or this or that, 5 graduated with a degree in philosophy. And of those 5, 3 are unemployed, 1 is a house painter, and 1's a gardener. So that tells you what's going on these days. People don't want to think. They just want momentary happiness. Oh, to cuddle together on a park bench in public. Oh, that is so nice. And even though the kind of fun that we have leads to depression, at least it was fun for the moment. And also you finally learn that that's not what you should be doing. Therefore, it has value. This is a fool's paradise. Out of compassion, Vidura is asking about such persons. And similarly, out of compassion, we're distributing knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam. Otherwise, what is the hope? Where is the real knowledge going to come from? Where is the real understanding going to come from? This is why we are so dedicated to distributing transcendental knowledge. Bhagavatam gives you the information, and it also gives you the direct association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's why Vidura will say to Maitreya, the glories of the Supreme Lord alone can do good for people all over the world. Anarto Pashamam Saksha Bhakti Yoga Madhoshade. The miseries of the living entities are superfluous. They're external. And they can be relieved by the linking process of bhakti yoga, which is based on hearing and chanting about Krishna. So we ourselves have to accept this point. Hearing and chanting about Krishna can solve all my problems. You have to ask yourself, do you accept that? Or is that simply something you tell to non-devotees? You should chant Hare Krishna. Solve all your problems. What about us, though? That is the question. Are there any questions? Yes. That's why regular hearing is necessary, because we forget so easily. It's amazing how quickly we forget. Therefore, Bhagavatam says, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Eternally go on hearing Bhagavatam, go on serving Bhagavatam. As soon as there's a moment without engagement in Krishna's service, the illusory energy comes in. You can watch it happen in the day. As soon as you're not engaged in Krishna's service for a moment, in comes illusory energy with some engagement for you. Some plan, some idea. You watch this happen during the day. It's amazing how forgetful we can be because the illusory energy is so powerful and we are so tiny. Sometimes devotees who've been around for a while make the mistake of thinking, I've mastered the subject matter of Bhagavatam. I've internalized all the glories of the Lord. I don't need to chant my japa every day because I've internalized it all from previous years. They have forgotten the power of the illusory energy to cause forgetfulness. In fact, those very ideas are the product of forgetfulness. So as you make spiritual advancement, more and more you start to understand how powerful the illusory energy is and how daily you have to take shelter of hearing about Krishna. Otherwise you become crazy. Yes. That's why we stress so much the distribution of transcendental literature. As Vidura says to Maitreya, O friend of the distressed, the glories of the Supreme Lord can alone do good for people all over the world. And remember, who is the ultimate controller? As Srila Prabhupada wrote in his poem upon landing in the USA for the first time, Krishna, you've put them in illusion. By your will, they can come out of illusion. If you look at that prayer, Markine Bhagavad Dharma, the prayer that Srila Prabhupada wrote before landing in the USA, coming off the ship, 3 times he says, how will these people ever understand? How will they? It's not possible. But then he says, Krishna, you can make the impossible possible. You can make my words suitable for their understanding. And then he presents as the actual solution, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. I know if that sound vibration of Bhagavatam enters into their consciousness, they can be purified. So he's begging Krishna, make my words suitable for their understanding. And he's stressing that he does have the solution to give them the sound vibration of Srimad Bhagavatam. So he himself was saying, how will they ever understand? But they can, because the very person who put them into Maya can bring them out of Maya. So we're not working alone. And that is the realization of those who are actively involved in distributing Krishna's glories. You realize you're not alone. You see amazing things happen. How you're working with the super soul to rescue these people. Otherwise, on your own, what can you do? But because you're working in harmony with the super soul, you see miracles happen. I was just hearing after our program a couple of nights ago, I happened to mention during the course of my talk how scientists have pointed out that the brain cannot distinguish between physical pain and the pain brought about by being rejected by one's lover. It's all the same for the brain. The pain of heartbreak, the pain of being rejected, losing one's beloved, the brain feels it to be the same as physical pain. So I just happened to mention that in my talk. And then afterwards, during the prasad time, one young man started crying. He said, oh, my wife, she became involved with another, and she left me, and this pain is so great. So this is what's going on these days. You just mentioned casually some point like that, and immediately someone starts crying. Yes, yes, this is what I'm going through. These are the realities. This is why we're stressing the distribution of transcendental literature. The distribution of Krishna's glories as the practical solution for individual problems and society's problems.